둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hello, Opus listener. This is Mijon Zulu, lead podcast producer at Consequence. In celebration of the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, we've opened up the Opus Podcast Archives to re-release seasons focused on some of history's most legendary rap albums. Next up, we revisit Cypress Hill's self-titled record, a landmark of West Coast rap that pioneered the weed rap movement. What's more, Cypress Hill's own Be Real, Sendog, and DJ Muggs all joined us for this journey through the album's legacy. When you're done with that, you can find all of our Hip Hop 50 content on Consequence, including loads of artist interviews, essays, and more coming out throughout the month. So be sure to check it all out at consequence.net. You can also snag some of our exclusive Hip Hop 50 merch at the Consequence shop at shop.consequence.net. And be sure to check back here every Wednesday and Friday for the next 2 weeks as we revisit Cypress Hill's debut record and continue our celebration of Hip Hop's 50th.
Hip hop has always been home to some of the most unique voices in all of music. And they often come in twos. Havoc and Prodigy, Salt and Peppa, Andre 3000 and Big Boy, Talib Kweli and Yasiin Bey, Killer Mike and LP. And one of the most unique sounding duos in hip hop? Sendog and Be Real of Cypress Hill. Their vocal deliveries are easily identifiable enough on their own, but together, just unmistakable. Be Real's high-pitched nasal rap style sounds nothing like his actual speaking voice, but it's the perfect foil for the boom of Sendog's aggressive baritone. This sonic chemistry, this blending of bars, this microphone marriage is what we'll be talking about today. In this episode, we'll hear from Sendog and Be Real, as well as people who know them, are inspired by them, and admire them for their skill and delivery as much as they do for their friendship and brotherhood. Are you ready? For the Consequence Podcast Network and Sony Legacy, I'm Jill Hopkins, and this is The Opus. Watch out, there may be some funky feels with this one. Senin Reyes and his brother Ulpiano, a.k.a. Mellow Man Ace, who we discussed in the last episode, they're from Cuba, and they made their way to the States in 1971. In 1988, they got together with New York's own Lawrence Muggeridge and native Angeleno, Luis Freeze. Here's Sendog.
We met Be Real. It was kind of weird because my brother met him before I did. And they were in a breakdancing group together called the Street Dancers. And right around the same time that I started emceeing, because I started rapping like when I was like 17 years old, my junior year. And then I talked my brother into rapping also by the time he was in 12th grade. One day he comes up to me and goes, "Hey, man, I got this kid in, you know, my breakdancing crew that, you know, I think he could be a really good rapper." You know, I said, "Well, you know, bring him down and let's check him out and let's see what he's got." So Be Real came over and he rapped for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes or something continuously, never stopped. But after like the first 30 or, you know, 60 seconds, I was like, "Ooh, he's kind of good." So I just let him keep going to see what else he could come up with, you know, because it was nothing written. It was off the top of the head back in those days. So then we became a three-man crew.
They formed a group called DVX, or Devastating Vocal Excellence, which is a very 1988 thing to name your rap group. But after they decided to get really serious, Senin, Lawrence, and Luis took on the names Sendog, DJ Muggs, and Be Real, and they collectively changed their name to Cypress Hill, which, all around, great decisions. This three-man lineup was just the right thing. DJ Muggs' beats and production, and these two writers and rhymers together, they established a style for themselves when most Southern California rap was getting smushed into the same lane. And it certainly helped that this style let them shine in two different languages. And that style was encompassed on the track Latin Lingo. Freak to the funk that no one else can bring. Yeah. Send dog with the funky violin. Yeah. Yeah, that's the nombre. Heard that homemade piece. Camelo and Frost. And get the funk. Yeah. Yeah. Send dog is not a kid. I bet that I don't know. Another product's problem. In L.A., you know, you have to have some kind of style. You know, you just can't be that mad dog dude all the time. There's got to be a moment when you're like clearly talking to someone in calm, but what you're saying, you know, can wreck their world, you know, and you learn that too from, you know, your OG homeboys or when you go to jail yourself or whatever, because not everything is going to come at you bright and loud. Some things are going to come at you in a subtle way, but, you know, it could be the difference between being cool and getting a beat down. We had to portray those voices in a certain way. You know, it just couldn't be like, go at it, go at it, go at it. And I think we captured that well in a song called Latin Lingo. And if you understand like the whole, you know, Latino get down kind of thing, Latin Lingo is a cool song and everything. But like I'm saying some serious shit in there. Like, we'll fuck you up in this nice, calm, polite manner. You know what I mean? Like, we'll get with you. Like, that's not a problem. You know what I mean? And I think that aspect of Latin Lingo is kind of like missing because it just kind of sounds like some cholo throwing spit or whatever. But well, you got to listen to the whole message. But you know, being cool and keeping your calm, that's part of the whole way that we were raised, you know what I mean? Then you'll be known as a recluse, you know, if it was otherwise. So you had to capture that. Because before, I would tell you that when we first started, all of our raps that we would do were up on the mic, and they were loud, and we were going for it. We were in the studio for the first time. And Muggs had to teach us, like, dude, I want you guys to have more of your natural personalities on these rhymes, not just try to go for it and be the next LL Cool J or something. Be yourselves. Calm down. Be yourselves. Go outside, smoke something, come back, and we'll try it again. And then we were like, oh, okay. You know, we had to understand that he wanted us to be, you know, sending and be on there, not something that we weren't. Here's Be Real.
A lot of labels sort of just looked at us like we were fucking crazy, and they didn't want to sign us. My voice is crazy. We're rapping on in different pockets of the beat that they don't understand. So, you know, we were just being us.
Well, some people understood, like Joe Nicolo and Chris Schwarz from Rough House Records. Here's how that connection happened.
Muggs had been working with a group called 783, and they were in Philly, I believe. And they had stopped in to do some work with Joe. And that's where the relationship with Joe and Muggs started. And as soon as when we got to the point of we were serious getting some really good demos in, Joe flew out to California, and he actually stood there at my mom and dad's house with me while we were going to the studio at the same time.
You know, they were enthusiastic about us, and they were excited, and no one had ever been for us. Everybody always looked sort of confused as to, what are these guys doing? You know, what's this guy's voice like? How come it's not, it doesn't sound like it's not West Coast or this or that. But they saw something different, and they saw what they could work with, I think. And the fact that they showed that interest, man, that won me over.
And Joe and Chris knew what they had from the jump.
I did a record on Geffen with Muggs with the band 783. So I'd known Muggs from that record. And Nancy Walker, who wound up being an A&R person, she was with BMG Publishing, and she signed them to a publishing deal and gave them a demo deal. I was in LA producing the Booyah Tribe for Kim Bowie at Island. But while I was out there, I did a song with Mellow Man Ace called Mentorosa.
Great
song. Mellow Man said, you got to check out my brother's group, Senden. And actually, I stayed at Mellow Man's house. Mellow Man and Senden were still living at home. And I stayed there and met Senden. And he said, you know my partner, Muggs. And it was like, well, yeah, sure. So when we heard the music, it was like,
it was probably the best demo tape for me, at least. I think it was the best. You know, you get demo tapes, there's like one good song and another song's kind of okay, and the rest might be throwaways. Mm-hmm. It was like five songs, and every single one of it was like they just kept getting better.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I'm really glad that Be Real knows that their voices are a part of this appeal, even if they didn't realize it at the time. If the DJ Muggs production, which is hella recognizable in and of itself, doesn't tell you it's a Cypress Hill song, the actual voices involved are a dead giveaway. Sen and Be Real, as distinctive as they are, were definitely influenced by some of the original distinctive voices in the industry.
I know the man that gets with the deal that rocks like the pimps, the ass real real. He can get real ill when you're on the chill. I like the quarter drop of dimes that can make it seem real. Master killer called the evil gorilla, yes, the best in the nation, yeah, number one.
Be Real is on record saying that he was inspired by New York graffiti writer, painter, MC, and sculptor Ramelzi. Ramelzi gained some fame from his appearance in the legendary hip-hop film Wild Style, and Muggs even samples his voice in Hand on the Pump. He ushered in a kind of avant-garde vibe into hip-hop in the 1980s and was able to switch up his style between his normal speaking voice to something really out of this world. But it took a while for Be Real to be able to do the same thing without causing harm to his throat and his vocal cords while performing. But he found help for that in an unlikely place, the opera world. He enlisted former opera singer and Hollywood veteran vocal coach Elizabeth Sabine and learned to project through his diaphragm, use circular breathing, and preserve that million-dollar voice. As for Sendog, he looked to New York for inspiration as well.
Bass, how low can you go? Death row? What a brother, no, once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal, the public enemy number one, 5-4-6, freeze, and
I think the first time that happened, when we experimented with our voices, we were in one of our friends' cars, and we always used to rap over Public Enemy tracks, and this one day, Be Real was rapping Chuck D's parts, and I was doing the Flavor Flav parts. And this one day I just came in with the, you know, with the deep voice, you know, and we were like, whoa, that sounded kind of cool. So we went and put it in a rap. And then when Muggs heard it, he turned it into like the song. But the first time we did that, I think it was around 1987 or 88, just messing around. And from that point on, every time we would do a, you know, we clown around, they would tell me, you know, do your Chuck D thing, you know, and I would come in with the, well, and all that. People would go, oh my God, it sounds just like Chuck D or something, you know. So we just kind of stuck with it, and then we curved it and tailored it to make it its own entity, and that's something that, you know, that just I'm known for. So we took a lot of the Chuck kind of style out of it and made it just like a mad dude sounding, like, you know, coming through to, you know, knock down your door and get with you kind of deal. That's that power voice right there.
And Chuck D was flattered by that, to say the least.
That's amazing. That's amazing, man. I, you know, I'm not good in taking any praise from anybody. I just like to keep it moving. But those guys touch me.
This is the part that really got me, y'all. Anyone can get on the phone and talk about songs. We have experts that talk about composition and sales and production and all of that. But when Chuck D, the Chuck D, got on to talk about Cypress Hill, and particularly his friendship with his Prophets of Rage bandmate, Be Real, well, he got really real.
They don't make guys like Cypress Hill. I mean, fuck the music, the performance, all that. They don't make men like Cypress Hill. Real, those are real dudes. I mean, real. There's no words for them. They'll tell you about rap music and hip hop, and you don't mention these guys. It's like you're not paying attention. Cypress Hill, they opened up this whole side of the Americas, bringing rap music and being able to bring it across and showing that if you speak a little Espanol, you can make it work. You can fit it with them beats and your music and your style. You know, I always thought that a super rapper is somebody who can spit more than one language. If you spit in a language and you can't talk to the crowd, you have 50,000 people in front of you and you can't talk to them, you know, it's your advantage. If you could find that common language, you could just say, all right, I want everybody to jump in the air in another language. And this is what people in the United States don't get. They sit on their high horse. They have their favorites that are fed to them. But if they really dig down, they'll find like Cypress Hill's the greatest group of all time. They're unmatchable.
High quality spitting of one language, that's impressive enough. And Chuck D would know all about that. But two? Damn. That's what it took to turn on some light bulbs over some aspiring bilingual rappers of my generation, like Rod Stars and G1 from Rebel Diaz, who themselves have opened for Chuck D and Public Enemy. And if you're listening, guys, Chuck D told me to tell you that he says hi. He really is just the nicest man. Here's G1.
That time was super diverse in hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Like you had the balance. You had the gangster rap. You had the more hippie rap. You had the more, you know what I'm saying, black power rap. And to have Cypress Hill in the mix for me, I grew up with it normalized. You know what I'm saying? Like it was part of my, like if I'm growing up since 6 years old when Cypress Hill first pressed out their first joint. And that, it created a space where I'm like, yo, this is, we could do this. My lived experience at the crib speaking Spanish, but in the street is English. And then you see it reflected back onto you in terms of Cypress Hill's music.
Here's Rod Stars.
For me, it was Bugged Out going to Chile and realizing their international impact. To me, that's like, I feel like a key point about Cypress is they're international. Like they translated a whole album to Spanish. You know what I'm saying? Which I think is genius. Like on some Rebel Diaz tip, I've always kind of thought with G, like, yo, we got to start doing some of these songs we got in full English and just full Spanish, you know? But they did that. One of my best friends in Chile, Lechuga, has a Cypress Hill tattoo. Like, it's to that level, you know what I'm saying? The type of love that they, when they go over to Latin America, they doing stadiums. They're not doing, you know, the club. They doing stadium type joints. So to me, that was also a big thing is a couple years later, traveling to the South and seeing like, yo, Cypress Hill is huge in my homeland. Even when they flow bilingual, it goes together. Like sometimes there's folks that try it. It's kind of crazy. I feel like my ear is a little like, is super critical when it comes to folks. Like to me, you got to do it. If you do bilingual, you got to do it right in both languages. Because I feel like there's sometimes there's MCs that rap full Spanish that try to go English, and I'm like, no, don't do it. Or there's other dudes that really don't have, like, you can hear their accent, like their bad Spanish accent. And with Cypress, they pull it off. They pull it off flawlessly. So I think that for me, that was also, even like with more years, as I've become older, I can appreciate the fact that they rock both fully.
Cypress Hill does rock fully. They rock both English and Spanish fully. They rock both mics fully. Their voices don't so much swirl together. That would imply a gentleness that simply doesn't exist on their first album, or any of their albums for that matter. It's more like iron and carbon coming together to make steel. Allies as alloys. And speaking of metal, in our next episode, we'll talk about Cypress Hill and how they rock hip-hop and hard rock fully, uniting those worlds just as well as they unite their vocals and their cultures and their fans. For the Consequence Podcast Network and Sony Legacy, this has been The Opus, and I'm Jill Hopkins. We'll see you next time. Now it's time to hurt her. Sort of like murder. A duck with the public's favorite rhyme, but I ain't a writer, a hater. I'm a spectator. Sinking and finding toys with no flavor. See, I'm talking about those who vocals ain't coming off. I'm scared to kill that well, but I'll be done before some don't know. The power of the last one. Slower, blower, blower.
Consequence Podcast Network.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska. And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network,